Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Grantharaj Srima Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Gopremanande. So does anyone remember anything from last night?
Seeing gopis so much in despair, in pain, and anger, Prabhupada, then Lord Krishna said, I will come.
Anything else?
Krishna's feeling just as much pain in separation as the gopis.
Yeah, very good. Anything else?
Krishna is the steel of problems. As soon as you see the deity, you should be there in heaven.
Nice.
And Radharani is never jealous of anybody. She thinks that she is the best. And you know, she can serve Lord Krishna. That's why she gets angry. Looks like she's envious, but she just wants to serve him.
Nice. Anything else?
This is the effect of the pastime of the bumblebee, where Krishna has decided that to protect the gopis, he has to leave them, because even when he's with them, they're feeling so fresh. And he's worried about them.
Good. Any other points?
Krishna is all attractive, he attracts everybody. Everything about Krishna is attractive.
Anything else?
So the entire philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatamrita is just after the expression of the
philosophy. Yeah.
Because the Akura offended Gopi by not consoling them, he had to be separated from Krishna.
Later on. Anything else?
Krishna had every intention to come back to Vrindavan.
On one level, on another level happens. Anything else?
Because the gopis were not married to him, so their love was really too intense for
Krishna.
Yeah, good. Okay, so tonight we'll go from verses 35 to 45, and we'll discuss, there's a lot of very deep topics in this section that we'll cover tonight. So we'll be discussing about the mood of separation of the gopis in particular from Krishna, and all the other bridge buses also. So we'll begin with verse 35. As he departed, that best of the Yadus saw how the gopis were lamenting, and thus he consoled them by sending a messenger with his loving promise, I will return. So this is the great mystery of Krishna's leaving, or apparently leaving, Vrindavan. these pastimes, there are many, many levels involved in these pastimes. And there are many facets to consider. And there are many reconciled contradictions. You know, because Lord Chaitanya explains the entire philosophy of the Bhagavatam is discussing Achincha Bheda and Bheda Tattva. So that means simultaneous, inconceivable oneness and difference. So Krishna's Achincha Shakti is always working within his pastimes. So in the pastimes with these particular pastimes, which are the most exalted pastimes of Krishna, the Achincha Shakti is working continuously. Which means that there are contradictions which get reconciled. Krishna leaves, but he does not leave. He stays, but he does not stay. He leaves, but then he returns daily. So there are many contradictions which are there, which Krishna reconciles by his potency in the pastime, to make the pastimes flow. So Krishna is feeling very compassionate towards the gopis and all the residents of Vrindavan. Krishna has 64 qualities. If you study the Nectar of Devotion, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami describes there are 64 qualities. And one of Krishna's qualities is compassion. And Prabhupada, when he comments on that, he says that the personification of Krishna's compassion is Srimati Radharani. So Radharani is full of compassion. And also Krishna himself is full of compassion. In order to understand any of Krishna's pastimes, we must also become full of compassion. In other words, our hearts have to become completely softened. As long as the heart is hard, one cannot understand bhakti. That is mentioned specifically by Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Anyone with a hard heart cannot understand Krishna. So you have to develop softness. Srila Prabhupada says, being born in India is a superior birth. And I see that because I'm not born in India in this lifetime. But then I associate with most of you are Indian, associate with many of the Indian devotees, and there's a natural softness which is naturally there. Srila Prabhupada says that actually those born in India are Krishna conscious, but they're just covered. Slightly. And Prabhupada also explains they're very close to Krishna. So they just have to turn around. And as soon as they turn around and see Krishna, they're very close. They have naturally the good qualities. So it is natural that for the jiva to be soft-hearted because Krishna is soft-hearted. And when you take birth in India, it means you've already cultivated that previously. Yeah. So that just needs to be finalize their cultivation. And many of the Western devotees are naturally soft-hearted too because they're devotees, so they have that natural inclination. So it is necessary. Krishna is very soft. Krishna is compassionate. And to understand Krishna, we must also become very soft and very compassionate. So out of compassion, he turns to the gopis. And in this verse, he says, I will return. It says that he sends a messenger because the chariot is leaving and they stand there still and they just watch him. And then as he leaves, there are messengers, there are people around him. So then he says to say, he passes a very secret ring, says, tell them I will return. So the messenger goes back and he tells the gopis. So he gives them different messages to pacify them. So this pastime is extremely deep. Brenda, I need... Yeah, you have to work yourself out. So the pastime is extremely deep, and in order to understand it, one has to enter into a very deep mood of contemplation, as we were discussing yesterday. Today I also had the good fortune of being by myself, by the grace of God. And actually, to study, Burujan Buru he mentioned this many years ago, he said, if you really want to study, you really need to be by yourself. You need to be isolated, in silence, to really absorb something, enter it. There's no distractions. So today, I was fortunate Krishna arranged so I could be like that. So I just spent about 3 hours just continuously studying this pastime, Shivaram Swami's book, Krishna Sangati, which is an amazing expose or explanation of this pastime. Is anyone reading that? Hands up if anyone's reading. Krishna Sangati? You have? Okay, very good. So, when we read the Sanskrit in this particular verse, the Bhagavatam says, Supremai, full of love. That is the nature of the spiritual world. That is called Prayojana. If someone asks us how to describe our philosophy, just like at the Sunday feast at the farm about 10 days ago, I had a question. I don't lecture at the feast. I don't lecture. I just sit down and say, any questions? And people just ask questions. If they don't ask questions, I lecture. So I just asked, and the first question I got was, tell us the basics of Krishna consciousness. So there's many ways you could answer that question. But then I thought in my mind, I thought, Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana. Lord Chaitanya has taught us that is the division of the Vedic literatures. If you understand Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana correctly, you understand the entire philosophy. So when Lord Chaitanya discusses Prayojana, he says that the goal of life is what? What is our Prayojana?
Krishna Prima.
Yeah, it is Krishna Prima. It is love for Krishna. That is the goal of life. And Krishna, he is prema personified. He is full of prema, or love for his devotees. Prabhupada says, you take one step towards Krishna, he takes 10 towards you. So he is full of prema, full of love for his devotees. So therefore, out of love, it says here in the verse, supremai. Out of love, out of compassion, he sends the message to the gopis, because he does not want them to be in distress. He doesn't want to cause their distress. That's not his mission. He wants to solace them. He wants them to be pacified. He wants them to feel loved. So he sends the message back to them. I will return. So it describes that there is only one way that the devotees can survive in Krishna's absence, or Krishna's when Krishna is not there. How do we survive if Krishna is not present?
Holy name.
Very good. Holy name. What else?
Association of devotees.
What is it?
Association of devotees.
What is it?
Association of
devotees. Yeah, very good. What else?
Worship.
Wait, yeah, very good. What else?
Listening his pastimes.
Or the char is. What's that?
Hope,
yeah, very good.
Remembering
him. Very good. Remembering him, yeah. So actually, it's by hearing about him. That is how we survive in Krishna's absence. You need to discuss Krishna, pastimes regarding Krishna. Krishna directly. And by continuously hearing and chanting and remembering Krishna, then life can be sustained. That's how the gopis lived. Otherwise, they would have actually left their bodies. But they could not leave their bodies because they were continuously hearing and chanting about him. And their prema is so great that sometimes, if we compare the different pastimes of Krishna, it's like you compare the pastime of Lord Ramachandra to the pastime of Krishna. Now, what took place at this junction, well, not exactly now, because Nanda Maharaj is going with Krishna to Mathura, but at some point in time, Nanda Maharaj becomes separated from Krishna. So when Lord Ramachandra's father became separated from Lord Ram, what took place? Dasarath left his body. So then some people will say Dasarath has more love for Ramachandra than Nanda has for Krishna. But it's not like that, because Nanda Maharaj and the gopis here and all of the residents of Vrindavan, they feel they could leave their body because this separation from Krishna is so intense. But the reason they will not do it is because they don't want to give pain to Krishna. So their love is even higher than Dasarath's. Nanda Maharaj's love is even stronger than Dasarath's, because they sustain it. Radharani thinks, I cannot live. If I die, he will die. So she thinks, I must keep my life within my body. But the only way I can sustain myself, I must hear and chant about him continuously. And by hearing and chanting, then Krishna is present. He says that earlier in the Bhagavatam, this famous verse. That if we are hearing and chanting about Krishna, that place becomes Vaikuntha. And we can sustain ourselves. So that is the mood of the Brijbasis, the gopis in particular. Now we need to understand, why is it that Krishna is leaving Vrindavan?
He has to kill Kamsa.
And it's interesting because he actually questions himself as he's riding out of Vrindavan. He actually questions, why do I have to kill Kamsa? I can organize for someone else to kill me. So he himself is questioning himself as he's leaving. But he has a mission to fulfill. He has pastimes to fulfill in this world. And to fulfill those pastimes, he leaves Vrindavan, apparently. In one sense, he does not leave, because the original form does not leave. We'll see that soon in the next few verses. It's the expansion that leaves. But in another sense, the pastimes, in many ways, they become uppercut. What does the uppercut lila mean?
Unmanifest.
Yeah. It means you cannot see him. He is there, but you cannot see. So that takes place, that he performs the uppercut lila. He goes out of Vrindavan and becomes unmanifest. Right? And then he can fulfill his mission in this world of killing Kamsa and then other demoniac personalities. So this is the beginning of the reason why he is leaving Vrindavan. Another reason, which the Acharyas point out, is that he wants to glorify the gopis and the residents of Vrindavan. Because by him leaving, there will be separation. And if there is separation, they will display the most intense levels of prema. And if they display the most intense levels of prema, as he has already done in the Gopi Gita and when he separated himself from them, it shows their supreme position. So he wants to glorify the supreme position of his devotees. And that can be seen by these pastimes of separation, because their love will be displayed to the highest level. So that is another reason why he is leaving Vrindavan. He thinks to himself, well, if I leave, then all the sadhakas will see the extreme love of the residents of Vrindavan, and then they will understand the glory of their love. So it's another reason why he is leaving.
Can we say something?
Yeah.
Krishna wanted Arjuna also to win the battle of Kurukshetra. Otherwise Krishna would have killed him.
Yeah, he wanted to install Yudhishthira as the king.
Yeah,
it's important. Yeah.
Probably his mother and father in the Torah play an important role
here as well. Yeah, we'll mention that soon. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, there's many, many, many layers to it. This is very intricate, this section. And to be honest, you know, I've been studying this with all of you, or many of you. How long now have we been doing all this? We started 2003, we got into the Bhagavatam 2005. So 12 years, but honestly, today is like the most ecstatic day I've ever had in my life. Yeah, the depth of the pastimes at this point in time, the depth of the Leela, it's gone to another level. Right? It's more ecstatic than anything which we've ever, you know, encountered, I've ever encountered. These are the deepest, most intricate, most developed pastimes, and the most ecstatic. And it made me understand, actually, that because Lord Chaitanya teaches us that Vipralamba is the highest. But, you know, I'm beginning to understand that more now, why it is the most glorious relationship one can have with Krishna. You know? So this is the most ecstatic part of the Bhagavatam in many ways. The ecstasy is the highest. The intensity is the highest. So, he also wants to protect, as we've discussed, he wants to protect them because Radharani's love and the other devotees' love is becoming so intense that he's actually concerned about them, as we discussed last night. So another reason he leaves is because he thinks, if I leave, it may be safer for them, for me to leave, because their intensity and their ecstasies are becoming so intense. With me there, it is becoming very difficult. Now, one may ask, why is it that he just suddenly leaves? The bridge Basis had no idea this was going to happen. How long has he been living there in Vrindavan for?
11 years.
Yeah, approximately 11 years. About 10 years, 8 months or 9 months or something. Around about 11 years. So there was no forewarning. A crew just literally drives the chariot in. They receive him, and next morning he's driving out.
Mm-hmm.
He never left Vrindavan, ever, in that 11 years. There's no pastime where he goes out. Everything's inside. No? There's even one time when Nanda Maharaj wants to go to the Ganga. Ganga's on the other side of India. So he wants to go there to take bath, and he wants to take Krishna and all the bridge buses. He said, let's go for a pilgrimage. We'll all go to the Ganga, we'll take bath, purify ourselves, and we'll come back. And then Krishna says, actually, Ganga is here in Vrindavan, at Govardhan Hill. There is Manasi Ganga. So from Krishna's mind, Manasi Ganga manifests. And then Krishna says, we'll just stay. So he arranges. They didn't leave one day in those 11 years. And then suddenly, without warning, a crew just comes in, says, okay, we're going now. Krishna gets on the chariot, and the gopis are beside themselves. They cannot imagine. Now, how can he leave? He is always there. Why would he leave? So this is their worst fear, or the deepest sense of anxiety they could have, that he would go away. So he also wants to protect them. Because he didn't want them to be in Vrindavan with him, living with him, and then there's some talk, I will go to Mathura next week or in 1 month or next year. So he arranged it very quickly to protect them. Because he knew it would be too intense. So they were living with him, but then he was saying to them, I'm going to go in a month's time to Mathura. That would tear them apart. That would just... the intensity. So he has to do it very... So in another way, he's doing this to protect them. Also, he wants to protect them by going to Mathura, because he realizes there's going to be very large demons coming with armies. So far, all the demons who enter Vrindavan, many demons enter Vrindavan, but they were just coming by themselves. But Jarasandha is soon going to attack Mathura, and Krishna knows this. He knows as soon as Kamsa is dead, the first thing that will happen is Jarasandha will come. And he doesn't want the Brijbasis to be affected, because he will bring an army. And he doesn't want the army to come into Vrindavan, because if it comes into Vrindavan, he has to fight there. The bridge buses will be in danger. So to protect them, he goes to Mathura. And then he thinks, I will fight Jarasandha there. And then when all that's done, then I'll come back to Vrindavan. His plan the whole time is to come back. But he really never comes back for a long period of time after this. He does visit occasionally, but he doesn't come back for a long period of time. So he wants to protect them in that way. So then the Acharyas say, well, then why doesn't he just take them all across to Mathura? Because then he can fortify them. They can all be in the fortress. They can be protected, even if the army comes. But then he doesn't want to put them through a whole battle. And he wants the bridge buses to stay separate, to stay with the cows in the fields, the pastures of Vrindavan. So he doesn't want them all to come across there. So then the question the Acharyas ask, they say, then why is it they don't come and visit him? He's only living. How close is Mathura to Vrindavan? 15
miles from you.
6 hours drive.
No.
Half an hour.
Yeah, it's not far. You can walk there. It's not far. Mathura and Vrindavan are close by. You can walk there in a day. You know, from Krishna Balaram Temple, you just walk. If you just go up the highway and walk down, you'd be in Mathura in one day. A cruise only took a day to go from Nandagram to Mathura on the chariot. It's not far. So the question is, why don't the bridge buses come across? Krishna won't let them come because if the demons, Jarasandha and the others, if they realize that Krishna is close with the bridge buses, because it's all hidden. The people in Mathura don't realize the relationship he has. They don't even know he's living there. So they don't realize the relationship he has with them. If Jarasandha and the others find out that he is close, they will go and kill them. So he's feeling he wants to protect them. That's why when he goes to Mathura, he can't let them come. Because if the spies find out that he's... So the whole pastime is like... So he wants to protect the bridge buses. So how can all this take place? How can it be that Krishna and the bridge buses can become separated? How is it this is allowed to happen? As we said, Krishna himself is even thinking, as he drives out to kill Kamsa, he's thinking, why am I going to kill Kamsa? It's not necessary. It's causing him so much pain. Why am I doing it? But Yogamaya is arranging it. So just remember when we had the Rasa Leela, which was only a few chapters ago. It wasn't very long ago, just a few chapters back. Krishna himself thought, while the Rasa Leela was taking place, he was amazed by Yogamaya's arrangements. So he gives Yogamaya the free will or the reign or the responsibility to dictate his pastimes. So even in this, he is surrendering. God himself, Krishna, is surrendering. He thinks, well, if Yogamaya wants to arrange like this, then I will surrender and I will follow. So it is orchestrated. It is predestined, in a sense, that he will leave. He has to go to Mathura. So the bridge buses will experience the highest ecstasy in separation. So he will experience the highest ecstasy in separation. And actually, I was reading today, even when he's in Mathura, because Mathura and Vrindavan are not far away. From Mathura, you can see Vrindavan, right? Because he's in the palace. The palaces are very high. You can see Vrindavan. It's visible. So he gets messages while he's living there, because they're very close by. 18 years, he's there, they're there. Right, messages come across. So when the messages come from Vrindavan and they tell how Radharani is feeling, right, he just goes out onto the balcony and he just looks at Vrindavan and he cries. Right, because he's feeling such intense separation from them. But he's letting Yogamaya fulfill her. There's reasons why these pastimes take place the way they're taking place. So, very beautiful explanation is given in Krishna Sangati, that Krishna was Srimati Radharani. Is Krishna's greatest devotee. There's no comparison. The whole Bhagavatam is to prove this one point. That Radharani is the greatest devotee. So Srimati Radharani, she was cooked when Akrura entered Vrindavan. Srimati Radharani was cooking for Krishna at that time. So just wait for the chairs to come in. And I can concentrate. Hey Prasen, what are you doing? Be quick, huh? Why do you take all day? Is that it?
That's true.
Oh God. Brinda, why did you open the door? You let these crazy people come in. Enough? Okay. Don't do that again, huh? So, Srimati Radharani, what was she doing?
She was cooking.
She was cooking, yeah. So she was in Vashana. And she was cooking. And Krishna was in Nandagram, and Akrura came. But the word spread very quickly that he was going to leave. So she was cooking, and when she finished cooking, the Manjaris came and they dressed her very nicely. And she,
put a gold card in the tray. Where is the Prabhupada cup? On top of there.
You bring it?
Should we bring the plastic bag?
Yeah. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Sure, otherwise I'll forget.
Yeah, I'll bring it.
Yeah, bring
it. Just leave it there.
So, she was cooking, and then when she finished cooking, the Manjaris dressed her, and she went into the assembly hall of Brishabhanu Maharaj, her father. So she went in, and then she sat next to him. She has her own throne. He is the king of Varshana. So he has a throne. You know, these are very opulent people, very powerful, powerful people. They live in great opulence. Radharani is a princess. She is very, very opulent. So she came in and she sat on her throne. And then she heard in the court, they said that tomorrow Nandana will go to Mathura. And when she heard that, she fainted. She was in such pain. So she fainted, feeling separation from Krishna. So she fell on the ground, and then Lalita and Vishakha, they took her, and they took her to her quarters, like her bed chambers. And then they could not bring her back to consciousness. They couldn't bring her back to external consciousness. So then, not being able to bring her back to external consciousness, Krishna realized what was taking place. So Krishna realized how much separation all the gopis were feeling from him. So at that time, it's not mentioned in the Bhagavatam, but at that time he expands himself and he goes to every single gopi. He goes to Radharani, he goes to all of them in a different form to pacify them, because he understands the pain that this is causing all of them. All the gopis are feeling intense separation. So Radharani, Krishna arrives, he sees her laying unconscious. So he plays his flute very softly. And by playing his flute, she comes back to consciousness. But then when she comes back to consciousness, she sees him standing there in front of her. And seeing him standing there, she begins to cry. And they just look at each other. And they're both crying. And neither of them can speak. Because the separation is too intense. They both realize that he's going to go. So then she says, if you go, I will die. And then he says, basically, that I must go. And then she says, then I will leave. I cannot live. You go, I will die. There is no answer to this. So he says, I promise you, I will come here every day. I promise every day I will come and I will associate with you every day. He says, I promise this on my cows.
So?
My cows. He says, I promise this on my cows. That I will come every day. I will be here. So when she hears that, she smiles very slightly.
Mm-hmm.
Very slightly. She smiles. She says, okay. And if you promise, then. So then, he disappears again. He goes back. All the Krishnas with all the gopis, they all go back to the original form of Krishna in Nandagram.
Did he promise to other gopis too?
Everyone, yeah. Yeah, he promised all of them. He said, I will return. He promised to everyone. But it speaks about Radharani because she is the greatest of all the devotees. So then, when he is leaving, so the next morning, he goes in the evening and he tells them, all the gopis, that I will come every day. But then the next morning, they all come because they're in so much anxiety that he's about to go. So then that's what we're reading now in the Bhagavatam, this pastime, where Krishna is getting on the chariot with the Akrura, and then all the gopis come there and they're feeling intense separation. Now there's more to this as well, but we'll save that for next Monday because there's too much to tell. So there's more to the pastime as well. Please come next Monday because the ecstasy is... I've never come across like this. All the pastimes of Krishna that we've discussed so far, this is the most ecstatic by far, as far as I can. Does anyone have any questions or comments at this point?
Spoke about the Krishna promised on his cow. So now, if we consider from that point of view, this original nature is to be a cowherd. He's a cowherd. So after these 11 years, he never heard cows in his life. So in Mathura, he's a prince, and in Dwarka, he's a prince. So the cowherd stops at 11, isn't it?
Yeah, the Vaishya activity stops.
So is there any description given of how he must be feeling separation from the cows? Is it because that was his original nature to always herd cows?
Yeah, so in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, then it says that he's always meditating on the gopis, and it mentions sometimes the cows. Mm-hmm. And even sometimes it says that in the middle of being with his wives, sometimes he calls out the names of the cows, like in a daydream. He says, hey Shamali, hey Daya, Davali, like that, and he calls out their names. So yeah, he doesn't forget. He doesn't forget anything about Vrindavan. If we understand Krishna according to the Bhagavatam and what Lord Chaitanya is teaching us, then Krishna is always thinking of Vrindavan. So whether he's in Mathura or Dwarka, he's only thinking of Vrindavan. And Briha Bhagavatam Rita confirms this, it explains this. And Jagannath in particular, it was very interesting today because by Krishna's arrangement, I was preparing this class in front of Jagannath, the deities. I'm staying with Prasen in his house. So he has deities, Jagannath, Balaram, Subhadra. And normally I stay upstairs, sorry, but for some reason I couldn't study. So I was studying today and they brought me down in front of the deities. So I was studying all of this in front of Jagannath, Balaram, Subhadra. And the whole mood of Jagannath, Balaram, Subhadra is Krishna in Dwarka feeling separation from Vrindavan. So this is the entire message of the Bhagavatam is Krishna only thinks of Vrindavan. That's all he thinks about. He might be immature or Dwarka, but he doesn't get absorbed or consumed by it. So when we understand this, then we've understood the essence of the Bhagavatam. Okay.
And also then, especially yesterday, I was meditating on whatever we heard in the class. So, especially looking at the distress of the gopis and the virahadis that we heard about yesterday. In our minds, sometimes we feel upset that Krishna shouldn't have done this, and that's an offense because we are understanding all these reasons, but momentarily we feel, why did he put the gopis through so much distress? Like they are lamenting. And you feel upset that why Krishna had to make them go through this, so there is an offense if you just didn't take that.
He thinks like that himself. As he's driving out, he thinks, why am I doing this? So if you're thinking like that, you're not thinking any differently to him. Secondly, about being an offense, it depends how advanced you are in Krishna consciousness. If you're feeling it's an offense, then it means we have to become more advanced. Because the gopis, they don't feel it's an offense. They say to him, they say, you know, why are you doing this? And if you begin, if that part of your bhakti, your internal cultivation, starts becoming stronger than the fear and the awe and the reverence, that's when you know you're advancing. So we all have to see that ourselves. It cannot be artificial, but this is what the Bhagavatam is assisting us in cultivating, that internal mood, where we feel more like the way the residents of Vrindavan feel than the mood of awe and reverence. So that will come in due course of time. So it's not an offense, it just depends how advanced you are, that's all. If you're very advanced, it's no offense. If you're not so advanced, then that's up to you to work out.
Any other points?
Actually, he didn't remember all of us.
What's that?
He remembers all of us. Because you know, sometimes things happen extraordinarily. So he must be, you know, remembering us and things.
He's just waiting for us to uncover our original state of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
I was also thinking about this past time, and I was thinking that, you know, why Krishna is leaving Vrindavan and leaving everyone in distress. But, that, you know, that time, one thing came in my mind that Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Janma Karma Chame Divya. It is very difficult to understand why he is doing. From external point of view, we think that he is putting everyone in distress. But in Sevakund also, he meets the gopi every night. And you know, external point of view, it's separation, but there is no separation ever.
Yeah.
He is meeting gopi every night.
Yeah.
So. Till now, if we go to Vrindavan, they would say after 5 o'clock nobody is allowed here. So that means he is meeting till now.
He is the supreme enjoyer. Premanjur.
When Kunti said here is side and then other side, here is within us. Not away, not far.
Okay. Sending their minds after Krishna, the gopis stood as motionless as figures in a painting. They remained there as long as the flag atop the chariot was visible, and even until they could no longer see the dust raised by the chariot wheels. So this is Vedic culture. Vedic culture means when someone leaves, you should stay there as long until you cannot see them any longer. That is the correct way of doing it. Not that. So until they cannot see the flag on his chariot. And so he goes and they just stand there. They don't go anywhere until they can no longer see the flag. And the acharyas say it, even until the dust which is coming from his chariot. Until they can no longer see that, they just stand. And when they can no longer see that, then they feel like, okay, he is actually gone. So when a guest leaves, then we should stay with them until we can no longer see anymore. That's the actual system.
What you're saying is very, very correct, because I'll tell you my story. My youngest daughter, Krishna, when she went to see off my mother, she was going from Sydney to Delhi. So she was seeing the plane and she kept on seeing. Because when you love somebody, you want to see everything. Till the plane was invisible, she was looking at that side. She didn't talk to anybody. So stunned. That is the love. We can see. If that love is material world, material world is much, much higher. You know that?
The gopis then turned back without hope that Govinda would ever return to them. Full of sorrow, they began to spend their days and nights chanting about the pastimes of their beloved. So, we cannot even understand the intensity of the remorse or the separation that the gopis are feeling. But the gopis' love for Krishna is so intense that it's very difficult for them to function in his absence. And it actually describes in the Bhagavatam a little bit later on, in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that Uddhava comes back. We'll hear about this. I don't know, we may hear about it this year, but I think maybe next year. We'll hear the pastime when Uddhava returns. And it describes in Brihad Bhagavatamrita that Mother Yashoda is feeling so much separation from Krishna. No one even cooks the whole time that he leaves. So when Uddhava looks at the kitchen, there are cobwebs in the ovens. And all around the palace, no one's dusted anything. So it's hard for the gopis even to function. And we'll hear about this in the Brahma Gita, that when Radharani is speaking to the bumblebee and Uddhava returns, then they see that they've become completely dysfunctional. They cannot function in his absence. That is the intensity of their love for Krishna. The fact that, you know, after this class finishes, we all keep going, that just means we don't have any love for Krishna. That's what it means. Yeah. We have to study the Bhagavatam in such a way that it begins to affect our consciousness. These pastimes have to affect. It's not something, it's just not Monday and Tuesday night, but it has to carry through. Right? And it means that Krishna has to become deep within our consciousness. And the moods of the residents of Vrindavan, we have to begin to assimilate them and cultivate them and feel them. Otherwise, Bhagavatam says your heart is like a stone, or it is like steel framed. Right? If these feelings that the Brijbasis are having, if they don't become our feelings, what's the point of doing all this? Why are we reading the Bhagavatam? We're not meant to read the Bhagavatam and nothing happens. Our consciousness is meant to change. That's the result of studying the Bhagavatam. That's what Lord Chaitanya expected. Just like when King Prataparudra, he came to Mahaprabhu during the Rath Yatra, and then he began to recite Gopi Gita while Lord Chaitanya was resting under the tree. And then Lord Chaitanya, he sprung up and he said, "You are Burijana. You are the Buridajana. You are the real benedictor of the devotees, because you are speaking about Krishna." In other words, Prataparudra Maharaj and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they had feelings when they hear these things, right? Their consciousness emotes. So we must also become like that, where emotions come, where we begin to take the feelings of the Brijbasis as our own. Whatever they feel, we should also feel. Right? Whatever Radharani is feeling, the Gopis are feeling, we should also feel the same way. Those feelings have to come. Otherwise, there's no point in this study. Otherwise, it's just academic. And this is not about academic study. This is about bhakti, cultivating bhakti or devotion. So, any points?
These kind of feelings come more often when you see a drama or a movie on a similar subject, because it's more acting and you get absorbed in it. But when you're reading one verse a day or one verse or something,
both are equally as powerful. Dramas are very powerful, but also reading is very powerful. You just have to go into a deep state of meditation. Anything else?
It's important to see that the gopis are not merely sentimental. Like, you know, we see sahajiyas, they might also express all these emotions on an external level, but the real test is what they do after that. And the gopis are absorbing in the process of bhakti. It's not that they're just crying externally or something like that, but now they are engaging in chanting about the glories of Lord Krishna and hearing and discussing with each other. So they are setting an example that these are not just external sentiments, but they do follow the entire process.
Good point. My dear King, the Supreme Lord Krishna, traveling as swiftly as the wind, in that chariot with Lord Balaram and Akrura, arrived at the river Kalindi, which destroys all sins. So the acharyas describe that as Krishna is on the chariot, he is just sitting very quietly, and tears are running down his face, because he is just meditating on all the Brijbasis and the Gopis. And I'll explain to you next week, we don't have time tonight to go into it, but something very beautiful takes place, that Krishna goes expanding himself, as I explained, and he goes out and he sees all the Gopis, and then he comes back, and then the next morning when he comes out of the palace, they're all waiting for him, and he gets on the chariot, and then he drives off with Akrura. And as he gets on the chariot to drive off, everyone in Vrindavan faints. Right, everyone. Every single devotee just the fact that he's about to leave Vrindavan, everyone faints. And it's so intense, Akrura also faints. And the only people who don't faint are Krishna and Balaram. And actually, Krishna almost faints also. He's just it's too much for him, right? And the only person who can pacify him is Balaram. Balaram puts his hand on him, and Balaram just keeps him conscious. So then I'll explain to you next week, while everyone's fainted, Krishna goes to the gopis, and then he has some pastimes with them. But I'll explain that next week, because we don't have time to go into the details. So then after all that takes place, then Akrura wakes up, and then he gets onto the chariot, and then they leave. And Krishna is just crying. Tears are running down his face as he is leaving Vrindavan. The river Sweetwater was more effulgent than brilliant jewels. After Lord Krishna had touched it for purification, he drank some from his hand. Then he had the chariot moved near a grove of trees and climbed back on, along with Balaram. Akrura asked the two lords to take their seats on the chariot. Then, taking their permission, he went to a pool in the Jamuna and took his bath as enjoined in the scriptures. So he parks the tree in a very, he parks the chariot in a very shady place under the trees. And he says to the two lords, he says, "You just sit here comfortably, and I'll go and take bath," because he's being very regulated. In Vedic culture, Brahmanas take bath 3 times a day. So in the morning, they have bath, midday, and then evening time. Prabhupada said the Brahmanas should take, or he actually said the sannyasis in ISKCON, they should take bath 3 times a day. So the Grihasthas 2 times a day. He said the Brahmacharyas at least once. So that's the system. We should take bath regularly for our consciousness. It helps to keep us in the mode of goodness, sattva guna. So Akrura, he's very regulated. So on the way back to, because it takes a long day, it takes all day to get back to Mathura. So halfway they stop and he goes to take his bath. But Krishna and Balaram, he doesn't want to disturb them. So he said, "You just sit very comfortably on the beautiful chariot and be peaceful." Right? And he's also a little concerned that if they go and take bath, because he knows Kamsa wants to kill Krishna. He's fearful because he thinks as soon as we get there, we have to go through Kuvalaya Peed, we have to go through Chanur and Mushtik, we have to go through Kamsa himself. So he's thinking even if they take bath, Kamsa will send demons there to attack Krishna and Balaram while they're unarmed and taking bath. So he says, "Just sit on the chariot, be peaceful, and then I'll take bath." So, any points?
2 verses earlier, it talks about Kundi removing all sin, so you don't have to bath it, bathe it. And now Kuru has taken bath. Why isn't he absolved of his misconduct earlier?
They're two different things. Sin and aparata are two different things. You understand the difference? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not the same thing. Mm-hmm. Sin, you take bath in the Jamuna, you'll get absolved of sin. But not aparad. Aparad's a different thing. So. You had a point.
Is Akrura fearful for Krishna and Balaram or himself?
Krishna and Balaram. Anything else? While immersing himself in the water and reciting eternal mantras from the Vedas, Akrura suddenly saw Krishna. So Balaram and Krishna before him. So what he sees in the water, this is because of his mood of awe and reverence. He sees Mahavishnu and Seshanaga. So this is his mood. He's not in the mood of the Brijbasis. Akrura's mood is different to the residents of Vrindavan. That's why he's not a resident of Vrindavan. So it's still mixed with awe and reverence. At this point in time, the pastimes begin to change because Krishna's leaving Vrindavan, which is full of Madhurya. And now he's entering Mathura and Dwarka, and the Madhurya is there, but it's very much mixed with Aishwarya. So then we're going to see Krishna's opulence manifesting. In Dwarka, just like there's different moods in the different dharms. So there's different moods with the different deities. When we go into the temple here and we worship Gaunitai, it's in the mood of Aldarya, because Mayapur is in the mood of Aldarya, mercy, munificence. When you go to the altar of Radha Vallabha, that is Vrindavan. So it's in the mood of Madhurya, or sweetness. And when you go to Jagannath Balaram Subhadra, it is Aishwarya, because it is opulence. Jagannath is the lord of Dwarka. Dwarka is the most opulent place. Actually, Vrindavan is more opulent, but Dwarka is, the mood of opulence is more. So there's incredible opulence, which we're about to see as Krishna leaves Vrindavan. Now he's going to show his opulent features. 16,108 wives, 16,108 palaces. So when we get to that, you'll hear the description. It's extraordinary, the opulence. So because Akura is in that mood, then he's seeing Krishna and Balaram differently. So at this point, at Akura Ghat, what takes place is Krishna and Balaram, Swayam Bhagavan, the original forms, stay in Vrindavan. And who leaves at this point in time is Vasudeva Krishna and Sankarsana. It's the expansions. Right? It's not the original forms. So this is where this takes place, because Akura Ghat is right on the border of Vrindavan and Mathura, right in between the two. Okay. Akura thought, how can the two sons of Anaka Dundubi, who are sitting in the chariot, be standing here in the water? They must have left the chariot. But when he came out of the river, there they were on the chariot, just as before, asking himself, was the vision I had of them in the water an illusion? Akura re-entered the pool. So already we're seeing Aishwarya manifesting. Krishna is showing expansions. It's different to the mood in Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, he shows the most Aishwarya. Which pastime does Krishna show the most Aishwarya? Yeah, the Rasa Lila, right? Because he expands himself 3 billion times, but the gopis aren't aware of it. But in these pastimes, the devotees become aware of his Aishwarya, so they see him differently. In Vrindavan, even when Mother Yashoda looks into his mouth and sees the whole universe, but her Madhurya Prem, the sweetness of her love, is so strong, it just completely eclipses or overwhelms the Aishwarya. Whereas outside of Vrindavan, the Aishwarya overwhelms the Madhurya. So it cannot be as powerful. There Akura now saw Anantasesh, the lord of the serpents, receiving praise from the siddhas, charanas, gandhavas and the demons, who all had their heads bowed. The personality of Godhead, whom Akura saw, had thousands of heads, thousands of hoods, and thousands of helmets. His blue garment and his fair complexion, as white as the filaments of a lotus stem, made him appear like white Kailas mountain with its many peaks. So Krishna is known as Avatari. Avatari means the source of all avatars. So the original form of God is Krishna in Vrindavan, and the first expansion is Balaram. Right? From Balaram comes the Adi Chaturvyuha, which means Vasudev in Dwarka, Krishna's form of Dwarka, Vasudev. Balaram himself expands into Dwarka, Sankarsana, Prajumna, Krishna's son, Aniruddha, Krishna's grandson. So there's the Chaturvyuha. From them, from Sankarsana in Balaram in Dwarka, expands Narayan, who then expands all through Vaikuntha. Right? And then there comes the second Chaturvyuha, which means all the different forms in Vaikuntha. From them come Mahavishnu, and then the different Vishnus within the material world. So it is all coming from Krishna. Krishna is the avatari, he is the source of all incarnations.
When you say Sankarshan,
Sankarshan means Balaram.
Yes. The Balaram expanded himself into first temple Buddha.
Yeah.
And said Vasudev. And then, so Vasudev is Krishna or Balaram?
Krishna. Balaram is Sankarshan. Vasudev is Krishna.
So, but he said that Balaram expands into first temple.
I'll explain to you later. I don't want to go into details. Any other point? Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yeah. Okay.